Hey, folks, what's better than fudge? Fudge with CBD. That's right. Sunset Lake CBD have a blended full spectrum CBD oil from their hemp crop, and they have mixed it in with delicious, really delicious chocolate fudge. There are 12 pieces of fudge, 25 meg of CBD per piece. It is, I can personally attest that it is both delicious and then gives you like a relaxing, I don't know, it takes about half an hour. The problem I have, of course, is that I have a bit of a sweet tooth, so I can't avoid eating multiple pieces of the fudge. And they sent me two packets. It was a huge mistake. I don't know what to do, really, but the fudge is delicious. All of their CBD products are awesome. SunsetLakeCBD.com. They have smokables. They have tincture. They have gummy bears. They have CBD infused coffee beans, all sorts of smokables. And they have the Arnica CBD muscle salve, if you will. Matt, speak to the smokables. We were all CBD skeptics, folks, but Sunset Lake CBD, their product is amazing. They're a great company in terms of business practices, $15 minimum wage, mostly employee-owned company. Their farming practices are awesome, 100% pesticide-free. They use integrated pest management, regenerative farming practices in conjunction with the University of Vermont. But Matt, speak to their smokables.
Yeah, the pre-rolls are cool, but I think the smokers will really appreciate their smalls line, which are already sort of pre-stemmed buds that you can put right in your grinder. So check out the smalls line.
For the more rookies, I have to say, I like the pre-rolls. I'm a little bit more of a rookie on that. But however way you go, you will be surprised what CBD can do when it's done right. And also, like I say, this is a great company. They're up in Vermont, and literally one of the big things on my bucket list when all of this pandemic is over is I'm heading up to Burlington and checking out. They're a great company, SunsetLakeCBD.com. And fans of the show, the coupon code left is best. One word, left is best. You get 20% off your CBD products. SunsetLakeCBD.com, left is best, 20% off. Let's start the show.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, February 5th, 2021. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Heather Parton, or Digby, will be joining us on this casual Friday, as will comedian David Feldman. As such, I'm wearing my soft-collared shirt to prepare. Meanwhile, at 5:30 a.m. this morning, the Senate passed a budget bill which allows it to now write a COVID relief bill, which will go through committee and then come back for a vote sometime in early to mid-March. The House, meanwhile, throws Marjorie Taylor Greene from her two committee assignments while she assures the nation 9/11 did, in fact, happen. Biden approval rate at 61%. That includes 25% of Republicans. Meanwhile, 64% of Republican voters say they would join a Trump third party. Speaking of Trump, he turns down an invitation to testify at his impeachment trial, which is starting in just 3 days. New unemployed at nearly 800,000. The economy added only 49,000 jobs last week. Meanwhile, Johnson & Johnson asked the FDA to approve its single dose, and the first single dose, I believe, COVID vaccine. Meanwhile, booster shots are being investigated to deal with mutations. Biden ends offensive support for Saudi Arabia's war on Yemen, but many questions remain. ICE cancels its West African deportation flight amid charges of abuse of immigrants. Smartmatic is suing Fox, Giuliani, and Sidney Powell for $2.7 billion. Lumenauer, AOC, Sanders introduce a bill calling on Biden to declare a national climate emergency. And lastly, a House committee reports that baby food may be riddled with toxic metals. All this and more on today's program. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for joining us at the end of this week as we begin to settle into a different era. The Biden presidency, of course, we still have some loose ends, don't we, Emma Vigeland, that we will be dealing with next week in terms of Donald Trump's, final, not act in office, but final act of office, which is to face trial in the Senate over his impeachment.
Yes, but we will always have Marjorie Taylor Greene to remind us what the downstream of Trumpism turns into.
Or, I mean, that is really the question, though. Is that the downstream from Trumpism or is that the upstream from Republicanism? I mean, you know, I forgive me, I cannot remember who posted this on Twitter, but they played a clip of a woman named Orly Tates. I don't know if you remember that name.
If I heard it, I think I would remember Orly Tates.
Orly Tates was a woman who was essentially the Marjorie Taylor Greene of the 2007-2008 cycle, who had evidence that Barack Obama was in fact not born in this country, had dug deep into the entire conspiracy around how they manipulated the birth certificate and how, the Hawaii birth certificate department had put out fake. To watch this and remember, like, this is all and it's been going like this for 20 some odd years, maybe more. I mean, really more, because I remember when Rush Limbaugh, who, as we all know, just recently was awarded the U.S. Medal of Freedom, I believe it was, 30 years ago, was talking about the murder committed by the Clintons personally and dragging a body into a park, making it look like a suicide. And really what we have seen with the Republican Party is it cycling around, and just each time it cycles, it just moves forward a little bit further on the bat crap crazy scale. And in each time it moves forward, and see that it's leaving the screen now as I move my fingers. Each time it moves forward, the intensity of the craziness and the breadth in terms of how many people in the Republican Party share that craziness grows. And we have hit critical mass, or what do they call it? Velocity speed? What do they call that? Do you guys know?
No.
Terminal velocity.
There you go.
Yes. And I think that's where we are now with the Republican Party. And I think, you know, the idea that Marjorie Taylor Greene in her I want to say it's a mea culpa speech, but I don't think she got that far in terms of, I think it was just a mea speech. She assured everyone that in fact, just sort of randomly, 9/11 did happen, which leads me to believe that there was probably some 9/11 truther stuff that has yet to be dug up about her.
There is, Sam. I mean, she said it on camera on like a Facebook Live that she wondered where the plane went when it was going to the Pentagon, where it disappeared to.
Can I just say, go ahead, Emma.
No, just she was very careful with her words, saying 9/11 did happen.
Oh, it's a bit annoying we have to talk about 9/11 when half the GOP thinks that believes in the conspiracy theory that Biden still overturned a landslide.
I guess, you know, talking about 9/11 does remind us every year the Republicans try to block health care to the first responders now are facing massive health issues due to 9/11, yet they use it as a cudgel all the time. Like, it's weird, you know, Ilhan Omar apparently is an apologist for 9/11, but the conspiracy theorists in their caucus who denies that maybe the Reagan was a plane that was headed towards the Pentagon and killed a lot of people, she's totally fine. Kevin McCarthy says he's trying to cast it's a big tent in the Republican Party, right? You have regular fascists, and then someone like Marjorie Taylor Greene, whose brain is somewhere on Jupiter, something like that. So it's a big tent.
Well, let's play this clip of leaving the Republicans for a moment. This is has the potential to be really important. This is a very good first step, but we need to see what this actually means for the Biden administration. As most people know, since the Obama administration, we have been supporting the Saudi assault, war, bombing campaign, genocide on Yemen. And it has created the worst humanitarian catastrophe, certainly in the world now, but maybe for decades. Joe Biden had this announcement to make yesterday.
Today, I'm announcing additional steps to course correct our foreign policy and better unite our democratic values with our diplomatic leadership. To begin, Defense Secretary Austin will be leading a global posture review of our forces so that our military footprint is appropriately aligned with our foreign policy and national security priorities. It will be coordinated across all elements of our national security, with Secretary Austin and Secretary Blinken working in close cooperation. And while this review is taking place, we'll be stopping any planned troop withdrawals from Germany. We're also stepping up our diplomacy to end the war in Yemen, a war which has created a humanitarian and strategic catastrophe. I've asked my Middle East team to ensure our support for the United Nations-led initiative to impose a ceasefire, open humanitarian challenge, and restore long-dormant peace talks. This morning, Secretary Blinken appointed Tim Lenderking, a career foreign policy officer, as our special envoy to the Yemen conflict, and I appreciate him doing this. Tim has lifelong experience in the region, and he'll work with the UN.
So the point being is that we're supposedly pulling back on our support that has been enabling Saudi Arabia's attacks on Yemen. We are sending an envoy there that is supposedly we're actually leaning in some way with an agenda to end this conflict. It remains to be seen, but this is one of those situations where, like, this is a necessary step.
Yes.
To go to that place. It doesn't mean that we're necessarily going to get to that place, but it's a necessary step.
Well, I was more optimistic when I heard about this than when I did a little bit more digging and I thought about it a little bit longer. A lot of what Biden used in terms of his language was, we are going to end our support for offensive operations in Yemen, which basically means we're going to stop the active arming them in the active conflict. But he also said, we're going to still support their defense of the border from Houthi rebels. Now, obviously, the Saudis were the aggressor in the initial conflict in 2015. This was the same language that Obama used. And so that's a very wide breadth of things that could be used there. And protecting the border, they don't really need more arms and money from us. And the fact of the matter is that Houthi rebels control 70% of Yemen, and Trump just designated them a terrorist organization. So that means that 70%, they're blocked from any and all aid as they die of famine. 200,000 Yemenis have died in this conflict. So this is the first step necessary, but I am concerned about the language used by Joe Biden. It echoes what was used to get us into this funding of a mass, indefensible genocide proxy war between Iran and Saudi Arabia.
Yep. So we will keep an eye on this and see where this heads, because, like I say, necessary first step, but to really achieve what needs to happen there, there's a couple more steps, and we will see where that leads. All right, quick break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Heather Parton, or as you may know her, Digby. Folks, today's show, and forgive me, I got that neck thing again. It's coming back.
I'm so sorry.
From last week. Hopefully it'll go back away again. It's weird. But today's show, and I should say also, as is just about every day, today's show and my breakfast, sponsored by Magic Spoon.
And my breakfast this morning. I had frosted.
Like we're turning into like you did.
We're doing
spoon cultists.
Yeah, or just the same person. Now we're just eating all the same stuff.
Exactly.
Jeez.
So look, everybody's trying to eat healthy these days. Particularly, you know, you're locked in, you can't go out and do as much stuff and be as active. Whatever. The point is, Magic Spoon has been a huge addition to my healthy diet. Magic Spoon has also released a brand new variety pack, which now features peanut butter, which is my tied for number two favorite flavor of Magic Spoon. It was a limited edition flavor in 2020. Apparently, it sold out three times. They do that. They put out limited edition things. And I think like you got to, I don't know how you get them, but there was one other flavor too that I really liked that they put out. But peanut butter has gotten so much love, they decided to keep it permanent and add it to the best sellers variety pack, which includes your favorite, the frosted, my son's favorite, the fruity, and my second, tied for second favorite, cocoa. There's zero sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, and only 4 net grams of carbs in each serving, and only 140 calories a serving. Plus, it's keto-friendly, it's gluten-free, it's grain-free, soy-free, low-carb, GMO-free. Folks, I am a huge cinnamon fan, but I am not above doing the peanut butter cocoa mix. Yes, I know. A little childlike, but here's the beauty. The cereal is not full of sugary junk. So my kids love it. I guess they get it from monk fruit. I'm not sure exactly how they work it, but it's delicious. And it's got protein. It's not heavy on the carbs, no sugar. What more would you want? Go to magicspoon.com/majority report. Grab a variety pack today. Try it. Be sure to use our promo code Majority Report at checkout, and you'll save $5 off your order. You will not be disappointed. Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they refund your money, no questions asked. Remember, get your next delicious bowl of guilt-free cereal at magicspoon.com/majority report. Use the code Majority Report to save $5 off. Thank you, Magic Spoon, for sponsoring this episode. And, of course, now half the team's breakfast, as far as I know. Also, speaking of healthy snacks that that don't taste very good or fill you up or satisfy your cravings, well, this episode is also sponsored by Monk Pack, who makes snacks that taste, again, like your favorite sugary treats, but with only 1 gram of sugar or less. This is another thing that I've been really psyched about to give to my kids. Monk Packs are keto, they're nut seed bars, They contain 2 to 3 grams of net carbs. They're only 150 calories. They come in amazing flavors. Caramel sea salt. I can't even think about this stuff really at this time.
Love that combo.
They have sea salt dark chocolate. They have peanut butter dark chocolate. They have pecan and maple. They're delicious. And again, this is another one of those things where it's like, you know, I know what my kids like. They like these things. They're sweet. They're delicious. But they don't have the sugar and the carbs that they taste like. I mean, I don't know how else to say that. I wonder if they call it monk pack because of the monk fruit. That, I don't know. Somehow they figured out how to make this. But this stuff is non-GMO. It's gluten-free. It's keto-friendly. It's plant-based. Try it for yourself and see. We got a special deal for our listeners. You get 20% off your first purchase of any Monk Pack product. They're like granola bars, like seed and nut bars. You visit monkpack.com and enter our code Majority Report at checkout. Monk Pack, so confident in their product. They give you 100% satisfaction guarantee. If you don't like it for any reason, they'll exchange the product or they'll refund your money, whichever you prefer. So if you don't like that flavor, you try a different one. You get started, just go to monkpack.com. That's monk, M-U-N-K, pack, P-A-C-K.com. Select any product, then enter the code Majority Report at checkout. You save 20% off your purchase. Monk Pack, delicious, nutritious food you can count on. And lastly, another product that we use, of course, here, and Brendan is a product of that product. For a lot of us, home now, obviously more than just our home, people are working out of their houses. A lot of us here doing that off and on. If you're a business owner or you manage people, home is now probably the place where you're doing your hiring. This is what ZipRecruiter also makes it much, much easier for you because it makes hiring faster. It makes it easier. And we can do it. You can do it all from one convenient place. And that is literally online, ZipRecruiter.com/majority. Doesn't matter where you are located. ZipRecruiter does the work for you. It does this by its matching technology, which scans thousands of resumes and profiles, identifies the most qualified people for your job, and then it goes out and grabs them and pulls them in and tells them to come and apply for your job. Makes it super easy for you also to invite them to apply to your job. One click. ZipRecruiter sends them an email from you. You stand out from the competition. It's no wonder that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. And for me, they have a whole sort of like a organizational grid in which you put them in there and you can say this candidate, someone I want to meet, this someone I'm going to put in reserve, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, I got hundreds of candidates, ended up going with Brendan. Still very happy with that decision, Brendan, you should know.
Yeah.
I mean, Emma's still on the fence, but she wasn't the one to use ZipRecruiter.
No wonder
4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/majority. That's ZipRecruiter.com/majority, M-A-J-O-R-I-T-Y. All you need is Wi-Fi to try it for free. Or you could do it with a wired, I guess. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/majority. ZipRecruiter. It's the smartest way to hire. Okay, want to bring in the proprietor of the blog Hullabaloo, the writer from Salon.com, Heather Parton, or as you may know her, Digby. Heather, you there? She's coming on, I think, at this very moment.
Here we are.
Oh, there she is. And was Matt playing your theme song?
He was. I missed that.
I know. We don't have the full sound drop capacity that we have when we're in studio. But we will return to normalcy, hopefully, eventually. But not quite there yet, are we, Heather?
No, we are not. We are not. Here in California, we're still lockdown. They just opened restaurants for outdoor dining back up. So that's about where we are. I mean, schools are closed, everything. You know, it's...
And of course, yesterday apparently was we breached 5,000 deaths. My understanding is that was a backlog, I think, from the state of Indiana, I believe. So it wasn't an actually a sort of a true measure. The infection rate seems to have plateaued. And I imagine down the line, we will see a drop in deaths. And we're seeing that in terms of hospitalizations. Of course, though, there's a race between the vaccine and the mutations. And we're going to talk more about that, I think, a little bit next week with an epidemiologist. But let's talk a little bit about what's going on in terms of both the politics of providing economic relief and financial support to fight COVID, and what's also happening. We have impeachment next week, but we also seem to have like a, and you and I discussed this earlier in the week, there's sort of like a dual track in our politics that seems to be happening now. That's very, very strange. But let's start by talking about what's happening with COVID. Last night, this morning at 5:30 a.m., the amendment Orama process of building a reconciliation bill went forward. The vote passed 51-50. And now the sort of broad mandate to go back to committees, fashion a COVID relief bill begins.
That's right. And I have to say, I was impressed that they, you know, just did the all-nighter, which is, you know, probably, I think, surprised people that they actually just went forward with that. I mean, the dynamic here has been, you know, pretty impressive in that, you know, Biden, the administration, they called up the Republicans this week, early in the week, and they had a nice little sit down for a couple of hours and they chewed the fat, talked it all over. The group of 10 came out afterwards and seemed to be somewhat appeased, at least with the idea that they were being given, you know, some respect in the process. And of course, the whole thing was phony because the 10, you know, that the 10 was supposed to represent the, you know, the beating of the filibuster if they were to actually put this through the normal process. And if they had those 10, then they'd be able to defeat a filibuster. But of course, you know, there were at least half of them who were not ever going to vote for any kind of an acceptable bill. Luckily, it seems that Biden and his team, you know, do understand that beating a filibuster is just not in the cards on this bill. And, you know, they came out with their $600 billion, you know, sort of opening ante, and it really wasn't anything. But, you know, Biden went through a process that seems to be important to certainly to the Beltway media and to the Republicans in the middle themselves, which is, you know, sort of showing them some respect. Now, I did notice that the media gave were trying to gin up some kind of a Democratic issue with this by saying that people were upset, that there were Democrats upset that he met with Republicans first before meeting with them, which is just absurd. And, you know, I mean, I'm sure the Democrats did not care about that. That's ridiculous. So, you know, they go through that process and he's met with Democrats this week and they're, you know, they're talking all this through. He's having meetings. But at the same time, they did not waste any time in getting this on the agenda, doing the all-nighter and getting the wheels in motion to put this bill through on reconciliation. And truly, the Republicans can't say anything about this. I mean, they will, of course. McConnell's already moaning about, you know, the breakdown of bipartisan unity, blah, blah, blah. But they were planning to put through their major tax cuts for the wealthy before the inauguration in 2016. By reconciliation. That was on the record. We knew they weren't even going to try to do anything with Democrats. So he has no leg to stand on. On some level, I think he knows it because there's, you know, he's kind of low energy with his stuff, you know, as Trump would say.
Well, I want to get to that part of it because I think that dynamic is fascinating. But, you know, a week or two ago, I think right after Biden was inaugurated, we heard talk that the Democrats are not going to get to the COVID relief bill until early mid-March. And it seems that the decision was like they knew then we're going to do this through reconciliation. Yeah. Period. End of story. And people should understand reconciliation is it is you got to go through like this all nighter session and then you got to take the bill and go back. Now, I imagine a lot of committees have already been working on this legislation and so, you know, drafting it and whatnot. But it needs to be negotiated out within the committees that have the jurisdiction over the different sort of like sectors, if you will, that are being addressed during the COVID relief bill. But what's fascinating about this week has been is that there is it should be a I think it provides some insight at the end of the day. You know, this is just analysis stuff, right? I mean, it's nothing that happened this week is going to provide material benefit for people necessarily. However, it is interesting to note, like, this kabuki theater, because that's what it was, really. I mean, like you say, the 10 show up and they need to be able to go back. These are Republican lawmakers who feel that their brand is reaching across the aisle. So they offer something they know they're never going to have to vote on because there's no way Joe Biden can take a $600 billion COVID relief bill right now. It's completely absurdly insufficient. Biden welcomes him to the White House. And so he performs this sort of performative, look at, I'm willing to negotiate with them or meet with them and show respect. And all of this stuff, the audience for this seems so narrow and so irrelevant, yet this is what politics are, sadly, in this context. And so we move forward with this stuff. The real question seems to be $15 minimum wage. Mm-hmm. And the other one seems to be what will be the income threshold for these $1,400 checks. Now, we should also say that, you know, David Day and our friend wrote a piece at the first 100 days outlining, let's just start with the $1,400 checks. First of all, these checks should be $2,000 just as a political matter. As a policy matter, it would make a huge difference to a massive cohort of people to get that extra $600. I think in a way that like they just don't understand in Washington, D.C. But as a political matter, it's going to be really important, too, it seems to me.
And Sam, before we got on to the next part, I didn't want to get off of the fact that we are talking about lowering the threshold now from 75,000 to 50,000 with these, 10 or 8 Democratic senators who are more conservative. Like, I don't know if we can frame this fully as Biden is just being performative with these Republicans. Part of their effort with lowering the threshold to $600 billion was to get those Democratic senators who fetishize finding some sort of middle ground to make this kind of play. And it seems to be working at least a little bit. I just wanted to throw that in there.
Well, just to that point, the David Dayen wrote that the difference between, on the $2,000 check, the difference between a $2,000 check and a $1,400 check is $45 billion in the context of a $1.9 trillion bill. And like, you think about like, what would it cost to buy, you know, like both the policy and the political, it just seems unbelievable to me. In terms of why you wouldn't do that. Also, the income threshold, the problem is that you're talking about 2019 income. So if I made $75,000 in 2019, there's a better chance that I'm okay in 2020 than if I made a $50,000. But the bottom line is we don't know.
Unless you file before the checks come out, by the way. So if your income changed for the audience that much, file before.
You can do that. All right. Well, so it's not on 2020.
Oh, 2020.
I think that's being proposed, but I'll fact check it.
Yeah, I have not heard that. I mean, I guess it's conceivable, but you would definitely want to do that. But I'll, you know, how many people are going to file before this? You know, the amount of people are going to be left off, and this stuff, like, and you had Larry Summers come out today now leading the charge of like, maybe this is too big. I mean, this is, they're building up towards this, right? Where they're trying to justify some cuts to this.
Well, they seem to be. And even on just a technical level, as far as the checks, one of the things that drives me crazy about this is the idea is that they don't want to literally send out the checks to people. They want to cut the threshold and then not send them checks. That's ridiculous. What they should do is send everybody the checks. And if there are people who received them that earned more than whatever their threshold is,
tax
in 2021, when they go to pay their taxes for 2020, you recapture it just the way they do with the healthcare subsidies. If you got a healthcare subsidy through Obamacare throughout the year, and it turns out that you made more money than what was, you know, than that subsidy, you know, related to, you pay it back on your taxes at the end of the year. I've had that happen. This is not a big thing. It's like you underpaid your taxes. It's very, very simple to do that. So the idea that they wouldn't want to initially in this first big blast, just to be safe, send out as much money as you can to as many people as you can. Because by the way, the job numbers today, from what I read, you know, it's not looking good. And it's not looking good for a number of reasons. I mean, there's the ongoing issues in certain sectors of the economy, which have been suffering greatly, you know, travel and hospitality and restaurants and the rest. But what these numbers also show is that this is starting to affect all levels of the economy. And that was not happening in the fourth quarter and the third and fourth quarter last year. But according to the New York Times today, the economy is slowing across the board all of a sudden. We are we're still having huge numbers of people filing for first time unemployment claims, and the number of jobs that were gained, I guess people were trying to tout that this morning, is 45,000 jobs. I mean, that's nothing. I mean, it's insane. Anybody to be proud of that by any means.
Four times less than you need to actually keep up with the number of people entering the job force.
Exactly. Exactly. So the problem is that we have an economy that is now we're going the wrong direction. Let's just put it that way. So whatever they do right now to try and stimulate, whether it's through the Fed action or whether it's through stimulus, COVID relief, whatever it is, they should do it because they can, you know, it's like we'll deal with if rich people got money that they shouldn't have gotten, we'll take care of that down the line. We'll deal with that. But right now we need to shovel money into the economy to just, you know, make sure that we don't go into free fall here. So I don't really understand that. The good news is, though, in all of this, I did, you know, Joe Manchin did come out. I guess he went on Scarborough and said 1.9 is the number. And he did make that commitment. So whatever they're shaving off in, you know, I mean, $45 billion in this big package, it's insane to even argue about it. And they're thinking, you know, and that's the kind of thing that $45 billion means so much to the people who would be receiving it and means nothing. It's a rounding error in the big scheme of things. So why, you know, why pick on that? You know, that's like, why do that one thing? The checks, and all you have to do is ask Raphael Warnock and ask John Ossoff how they feel about this, because that promise was probably what put them over the top. And
without
Joe Biden went out there and said, we're sending these checks out immediately. And they better think twice about going back on that and not fulfilling that promise.
This is there's a little bit of bubble, you know, quality to this. Apparently, like 4 or 5 minutes ago, Molly Nagel, ABC White House reporter, reports that Biden says, quote, I'm not cutting the size of the checks. They're going to be $1,400, period. That's what the American people were promised. I mean, I understand what they're trying to do here, but it is pretty transparent. Like, I get, like, it is just because you're going to be forceful about stating a number does not mean that people aren't going to notice the difference between 2,000 and 1,400. And I get it. The promise was made, frankly, after the bill was passed for the $600. So, you know, like he wasn't up there in Georgia going down there and saying, like, you vote for these guys in office, you're going to get $2,000,
including the $600 that we already passed.
Like, we didn't hear the asterisk then. Mm-hmm. And so I that seems dubious to me. Now, Jordan Weissman from Slate said this quote on Twitter. I asked Senate Finance whether checks would be based on 2019 or 2020 income. Response, if you file your taxes by the time the relief bill is passed, which, you know, that's mid-March. I'm sorry. Like, you know, the number of Americans who file their taxes a month early. I'm sorry.
I know. I'm just, this is for our audience.
No, I understand. I understand. But you know, why this is insufficient. The IRS would use your 2020 income, not your 2019 income when sending the relief payments. This was how it's handled with the CARES Act. I mean, so yes, folks, particularly if 2020 2019 was good and 2020 was bad for you, which that's the whole point of this, right? I mean, that's what this is supposedly designed about, because 2019 was better than 2020 for people because of the pandemic in 2020. I mean, this just seems to be like, why are they getting bogged down with this? And here's the other thing. All of this now is on the Democrats. And I understand you can't blame Sherrod Brown, let's say, for what Joe Manchin does. I understand that it's unfair to say, hey, Elizabeth Warren, you're responsible for, you know, for Kristen Sinema reluctance. But the fact is, they're going to pass it with 51 votes. And so they own it. There is no, like, there is no debate as to whether they need to get Republicans or not. And, you know, the only thing I can say is that we're seeing at least some progressive groups target people like Manchin and Sinema, and that those targets need to be stronger and more forceful and go forward. And this is where Joe Biden needs to go down to these people and say, like, look, I'm not going to ask much for you, of you. There's only so much legislation you're going to be able to pass with 51 votes. We need this now, or you're going to be in the minority in 2 years. And that's it. And that's what really, it seems to me, needs to happen.
Right. I mean, notice that I don't think, maybe I'm wrong here, but I don't think Biden's had a meeting with the Democratic senators, has he? I mean, he's just met with Republicans. It's Republican senators and Democratic House members. He met with the House members today, I think. Has he met with the Democratic senators?
I think he did meet with Manchin. I think that's where that two.
I think he met with that group, that whole, yep. You know.
Oh, he did. Okay. But yeah, I mean, Biden's going to have to. And by the way, Chuck Schumer, too, who, you know, he's not a potted plant in this whole thing. And, you know, to his credit, I don't think he's been bad so far. I mean, Schumer hasn't really, he seems to have, you know, piloted this thing fairly efficiently so far and sort of understanding the urgency of it and hasn't really backed off. So that's good. But I just, you know, it does get worrisome when you start. I mean, this is the flagship sort of, you know, policy within the, I mean, there are two things, obviously. It's COVID relief, you know, meaning, you know, getting whatever money needs to be spent to get vaccinations and all the other mitigation, you know, policies and programs in place. And they need the money for that. But and states and local governments have been, you know, crying for months because the Republicans, for some unknown reason, and I don't actually understand this, but for whatever reason, they are just adamantly opposed to helping out states, local and states governments during this crisis. But this check, these checks, that's the tangible thing. You know, you get they're sending out these cards now, you know, these like credit cards. And, you know, that's a real thing. It's a tangible thing. You hold it in your hand. It's got your name on it. You can go spend it immediately. So it's a big mistake to skimp on that. Just aside from the substantive reasons to get the money out, as we've discussed, but just on a purely political basis. It just makes no sense. This is something people would see instantly and go, ah, okay, we're seeing some action here. And it's more than 600, which, you know, really was a drop in the bucket.
Right. All right. Well, in terms of like the $15 minimum wage, I don't have a real sort of like sense of what's going to happen there. Like if I had to guess, I would say they're going to put this stupid income threshold on this, and it's going to be at $1,400. But when it comes to the $15 minimum wage, I don't really have a sense. I mean, last night, you know, what we saw was a series, this Voterama, as they call it, is a way of Republicans bringing up amendments that they supposedly are going to be votes that will embarrass Democrats. And Joni Ernst thought she was being very, very clever. She brought up a cannot raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour during the pandemic bill. And, you know, this is honestly just like not a very bright way to write it, because she thought that she had nailed everybody and got them to vote against it, so that they could, you know, that they could go back to their small business owners and say, look at what they're doing to you on a pandemic, forcing you to pay $15 an hour for employees who won't even show up, type of thing. And then Bernie Sanders was like, you know what, I'll vote for it, because my bill doesn't even call to raise the $15 minimum wage during, you know, in the next whatever it is, 6 months, 8 months. It's going to phase in over the course of 4 years. And they just, that was that. And so, what is your sense of where this goes?
I honestly don't know. I mean, this is a tough one. I know that, I mean, Sanders, obviously, and he's the new chairman of the budget committee, which is, you know, kind of interesting in itself, that, you know, he's adamant about this. And I think that most of the progressives, and they're, you know, I think, Wyden, I think, actually was with him on this as well. You know, not your usual suspects, in other words. I mean, this has got some wide, support within the Democratic caucus. And so, I don't know if this is going to be something that they somehow push out of the COVID bill. I mean, there's a possibility that will happen. But it seems to me like they're talking about things like having different thresholds take place in different states that are starting from a lower level, that they will have a different sort of
timetable.
Timetable for doing it. So there are things that are being discussed. And, you know, I mean, one of the things that you just have to keep in mind here about this $15 minimum wage was just, I don't know, maybe 3 years ago, unthinkable on a national level. I mean, they were fighting when Hillary Clinton ran, she took all kinds of grief for proposing a $12 minimum wage. And the fight for 15 was a grassroots initiative that and it went way above even what some of the liberal economists were proposing at the time, saying, ooh, that's just, and they, of course, the liberal economists weren't against it because it was economically problematic, because it isn't. And we've proven that all over the country where they have done it. It was because they decided that it was politically difficult. Well, economists shouldn't talk about politics. You know, that's right. Really, we don't need to hear from them on that particular thing. And they were wrong. And it turns out that this is a mainstream idea. To me, the argument right now rests solely on the fact that Florida, red state, Trump loving Florida, just voted for a $15 minimum wage. And if they can do it, everybody can do it. And it just proves that this is not a loser of a political argument. So, you know, I think we need to give the progressives some kudos here, because this is one of those issues where it just shows, you know, go ahead, you know, shoot the moon a little bit here. Just see if you can get this into the mainstream. And of course, because economically it was totally logical. I mean, what is $15 an hour add up to yearly? It's like $31,000 a year. It's not like anybody's getting rich off of this.
No. No. And we know that based on productivity, if it had kept pace with productivity in terms of what is actually being generated in the economy, it would be closer to like $24 an hour. All right. So I want to talk about just sort of the other, you and I have had this conversation. I think, and Emma, we've also discussed this, that there are two essentially media universes that Americans function in. And one is distinctly conservative now. And this was not the case 15 years ago. It used to be that conservative media sort of stream, if you will, would try and get into the mainstream media. They would go through Drudge and they would go through Fox, and then it would become a bigger narrative. Now, over the past 4 or 5 years, 6 years, 7 years, it has split to where the conservative stream of media is self-sufficient. It no longer looks to infect, if it were, the mainstream media. It just lives on its own. So you have people who are like Marjorie Taylor Greene, and who are the 75% of Republicans are convinced that Donald Trump won the election. And so that dynamic now seems to be taking place a little bit in terms of the way that the politicians are operating, because we saw 10 members of the Republicans come to Biden and say, okay, one third, we're offering one third of the COVID relief. The rest of the party, the other 40 members of the Republican Party, or 39, they're not even engaging in dealing with a pandemic. And as bad as it looked for those 10 Republicans to come, like, we demand less relief for the American public during this pandemic, people forget there's still 40 other or 39 other Republicans who just apparently not interested in any of it, like getting engaged in any, and they have no idea as to what we should do about this pandemic. It's like, they are living now in an alternate, you know, like they're not even interested in governing or even being an opposition party within the context of our government. They're just like becoming this sort of like cultural force that happens to show up at the Capitol a couple of days a week.
Well, you're absolutely right. I wrote it after we spoke about it. I was thinking about this, and I wrote about it for Salon this morning, because it's really fascinating to watch this unfold. You know, with just as another example of what you just said, the Marjorie Taylor Greene vote, that was the public vote, right? This was the vote that all the people were going to know exactly who voted what. Only 11 Republicans voted to deny her committee appointments. And those 11 were all people who were specifically tied to certain things that she had said, like the Parkland shooting or 9/11 or things. Those people felt a particular sort of pressure from their own constituents to vote against her. And it was a risky move, because then you've got all the Trump people who, you know, come out and go, we're going to primary you. And they, you know, they send Matt Gaetz up to Liz Cheney, whatever. But think about that. 11 of them, 199 Republicans voted essentially to support her and to say, yes, she's a mainstream member of our caucus and she deserves to be treated just like everybody else. The night before, on a secret ballot, they had voted to allow Liz Cheney to retain her leadership position. And because it was a secret ballot, they have plausible deniability, any of them, to tell their constituents, oh, no, I didn't vote for her. I wasn't one of the ones who voted for her. I was on the other team. So what you're seeing is, I mean, so what that, you know, illustrates is exactly what you're talking about. They are living in a completely, in a completely hermetically sealed bubble now that really has almost nothing to do with governing at all. I mean, Mitch McConnell, like I said earlier, you know, he's kind of low energy about this. He comes out, he's trying to appease his donors. He's worried about his senators coming up in 2022 that may be in a purplish state where if they lose any more of those, you know, suburban kind of, you know, non-insane voters that don't spend all day watching Fox or OAN or Newsmax, that they know what's going on, and he's worried about them. So he's trying, but not very hard, because really his audience, his constituency in the Republican Party now is completely brainwashed by right-wing media, and they get nothing from anything else. You watch this happened this week with AOC, where, you know, she came out and gave that, you know, very moving sort of, recitation of what happened to her on January 6th. And immediately, you know, the Fox News people turned to just mockery. They didn't engage with it at all. They just mocked her as being hysterical and a drama queen. And they,
comparing her to Jussie Smollett, the actor from Chicago, whatever that Chicago show was. But,
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so they didn't even want to engage with that. And so what that is showing is that the January 6th insurrection, they are now moving to down to some kind of an urban myth, as if it was really just kind of a rowdy tailgate party instead of an insurrection, an attempt to overthrow an election. And this has got the Republicans, they're out of it now. They are no longer engaged in governing at all, except for...
That's the amazing thing about it, is like we've seen them engage in that type of behavior, but not exclusively. Right. Like there's no other part of like, hey, deficit reduction or whatever. Like they don't have any of that anymore. They've always pursued these sort of like cultural, you know, issues and but they were in service of like trying to give them some strength to go in and hurt people economically. And they don't even seem to be attempting that. That's what's so... I think this is the analogy I think I used when we were talking the other day, was like, they're not only like losing at the baseball game on the baseball field. They're not even fielding a team. They're out outside the park doing a contest about how many hot dogs are being sold at by the hot dog vendors. Like it has nothing to do with governance. They're an opposition party, but not within the context of government. They're developing a counterculture that doesn't even seem to have a political wing, or at least a governmental wing.
During the Trump years, what? I mean, they had full power for the first 2 years. They had it all, and they had the Senate and the presidency in the second 2 years. And what did they propose to do ever? I mean, they did
just tax cuts was the only thing that they did.
And then they tried to repeal Obamacare, and McCain came along because he had a grudge against Trump, and they got lucky. We got lucky, and he, you know, thumbs down. They didn't do anything else. They don't have an agenda. And, you know, it's funny because I went back and realized as I was writing this piece for Salon that, you know, look at the Republican platform. They didn't do one. They didn't even put one through. They said, we hereby pledge our support for Donald.
I forgot about that.
I mean, that was it. They do not have an agenda anymore. There's nothing left of it. It's all, they did everything they could. They cut every tax they could. Grover Norquist and his drowning the government in the bathtub. Well, that hasn't worked out too well when you look at the kind of crises that we're facing. And I just don't think they have any answers for this. What are they going to do? Come out and say, well, the way to deal with the pandemic is more tax cuts? I mean, how can they possibly, they have nothing to say. So they've retreated into this other world. And I don't know that they necessarily want to, the people in Congress, or at least most of them. They just have no choice. That's where their voters are. Their voters are no longer engaged in politics as we've known it either. Their voters are now QAnon conspiracy, their culture war, and Donald Trump.
That's also part of why not getting rid of the filibuster is so ridiculous, because the Republicans have already done everything. They've already exploited the rules of the Senate to their advantage to this insane degree. So there's no like, what if? They've done it already. They've stacked the Supreme Court. They've passed insane tax cuts. They've been as extreme as possible. So then you got to kick back. You got to fight back a little bit.
And you just have to go on and just do what you want to do. And the weird thing is that because the other side is so obsessed with this culture war stuff. I mean, if you watch Fox in the evening hours, and by the way, Fox is dying in the ratings. There's heavy competition coming from OAN and Newsmax. And I think a lot of their voters tuned out when when Donald Trump stopped, you know, the star of the show was no longer available. But if you watch that, they are not engaged in any of this stuff. It's completely extraneous to what's going on. And that gives the Democrats an opening here. Just do it.
It gives the Democrats an opening. It gives progressives an opportunity to sort of like hold to account where the real problems are. I mean, this is very exposing. You know, a lot of the Democrats now are a little bit naked in this situation because there is no chance of getting any of the Republicans. They've completely checked out. So now it's just up to you guys. And it's like, you know, what comes about is a lot of the pretense is washed away of some of this. And so it's going to be, you know, we have two dynamics going forward that I really don't think I you know, maybe the analogy is when the Democrats had for was less than a year, maybe when they had that supermajority. People forget the first 2 years of Obama, Franken wasn't in until June. And then by January, Kennedy was gone. So there was really about 6-8 months there, I think, where they had a supermajority. But that's the closest thing I can see on the Democratic side, right? Where people are like, you got no excuses and you got to do it. And we're not going to buy excuses. But this dynamic on the Republican side, like, and I had forgotten about the platform. And you know, and the platform is performative in many respects. And, you know, nobody takes it too seriously. But, you know, it does provide at least, you know, maybe not a terribly accurate rudder, but it's a rudder. They have no rudder. And I wonder, how easy is it? Because this is a feedback loop, right? If there are no constituency out there that's really interested in the Republicans engaging in government, they don't have the ability to build these narratives back up. The deficit matters, whatever, you know, whatever the sort of, you know, really lies and just sort of myths that they were creating to justify their cuts and taxes and supply side or whatnot. If there's no market for that with their own constituency, people are just going to, they're going to atrophy. They're not going to know how to deploy this stuff. The media is going to get out of like the, and I think to a certain extent, we see a little bit of that now of like responding to those sort of dog whistles about, you know, whatever fiscal responsibility. I mean, where do they go? If this goes on for like 3, 6, 9, 12 months more, like where do they go? Like, where do they go from this?
Well, I don't know. It seems to me like they just go farther down the rabbit hole. That's, you know, and of course, you know, we've discussed many times in various venues about the dangers of that rabbit hole and where that's leading us in culturally and in terms of the dangers of an extreme far right and, you know, what they could potentially be doing. But in terms of actual governance, I think they become, you know, atrophy is a good word, because I think that's exactly what happens. They just shrink into this, into their hermetically sealed bubble, and they sort of are kind of flailing about in there. I mean, even Mitch McConnell, who, you know, he desperately wants to get his majority back. And I mean, that's all he cares about. There's nothing more in life to him than that. And they don't know what to do. They even ones who are aware of this, and there are some, there's a handful in the House and a handful in the Senate who understand the dangers here and get that their only hope is to try and extricate their voters from that bubble and get them back into the mainstream. They can't do it. They have no power. They have abdicated their agenda to the right-wing media. And the right-wing media is out there doing whatever they need to do to maintain their audience. And they've addicted their audience to this kind of outrage, grievance, you know, mockery and bizarre conspiracy theories over the past 4 years, and Donald Trump, frankly. And they don't know how to get out of it either. I mean, they're all in this maelstrom now of just, you know, bizarre, you know, it's beyond dog whistles. It's not even dog whistles. It's just blatant, you know, white nationalism, racism, conspiracies, and fealty to Donald Trump. So it's a very weird thing. And, you know, it's hard to imagine that we can have a healthy democracy with that many people involved in something like that. On the other hand, to me, what we see, and this is what I put in my piece, we're going to see now what the American people really want. Do they want material? Do they want a government that materially delivers to them? We're in an emergency in a number of different levels. Or do they want this sideshow, this circus that we've been living through for the last 4 years, which is essentially what it is? Donald Trump did nothing but perform the entire time. And we all sat there kind of trapped, right, by his sideshow. So is that what people want, or do they actually, will they respond to having, you know, to having material benefits delivered to them? And of course, you know, it's going to take the Democrats, and they better be
to actually deliver those material benefits to deliver it.
Not only do they have to deliver it, they've got to make sure people know that it was delivered to them and who delivered it to them and who didn't. So, you know, that's a big thing, but we'll see. I mean, that's what's happening.
Big Joe Biden signature on the checks this time.
All right. Well, Heather, always a pleasure. I think the real story that we're going to be talking about in the future is going to be two things. A lot of Republican retirements over the next 3 to 6 months of lawmakers, and a lot of action in the states, because I think the Republicans are already trying to suppress the vote there. And I think that's going to be one of their sort of rear guard moves. Heather Parton Digby, always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I enjoyed it. Nice seeing
you. Quick break. We'll be right back. So Emma, we're heading into sort of some uncharted territory, and it's going to be a good opportunity for us to keep an eye on Democrats and have it very explicit what they're doing. And like Heather said, there's a great opportunity for them to do a grand experiment with the American public. You can deliver stuff and see it and make, you got to execute it properly, but see what, how it resonates with people.
Democrats are actually going to have to market themselves, Sam. That is a tall task for them and has been for a while, and market themselves on their economic populism. That will be key.
And market and also have the product that they're going to market. All right. Well, that's it for us today. Don't forget, if you missed any part of this program, you can watch us on the Choice channel on the Peacock app. Check it out, 5 p.m., 10 p.m. Also, Matty Hassan had a great clip about India, and you should check that out. It's all over social media. Enjoy that one. All right, we will be back on Monday. And
just kidding, we're here now.
We do that every day. We do that head fake where people are like, oh, I guess the show is up. That's what it is. Like, if they, it used to be back in the day, you would reach for your television and you turn off the knob, change the channel. Do you know what I'm talking about?
You remember those days of knobs?
I was, in my 20s, probably around the time where I was your age, I was sitting in a chair in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And, I had I guess you could call it a studio apartment. It was sort of a little bit less than that. Did not include its own bathroom, but that's a different story. We can talk about that another time.
It was a hallway bathroom deal.
There was a shared, there were shared facilities. And I had a TV with a knob, and there was no remote on this TV. And so I had fashioned one with a stick and two pieces of plywood and some duct tape. And that was quite efficient for me at the time. There was only four channels, so you didn't really have that much to go for anyways. There was only so much you could choose at that point.
So a stick and a piece of so you didn't have to go to the TV every time to turn the dial.
Yeah, no, it was a little bit of luxury.
Right.
Speaking of luxury, what a treat it is to have our next guest join us. He is going to call in. Do we have him? Do we have him call in? Is he there yet?
I'm here.
There he is.
Hang on. I'm listening. What do I hear? Hang on. Let me turn off.
We hear you. You sound great.
I'm hearing there's a delay. Hang on for 1 second.
Great.
The boomer has to do something.
Well, there it is, ladies and gentlemen. A picture of David Feldman. He is calling into the show.
I'm calling in. Now, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you fine the whole time.
Thank you. I'm here now.
Great. Well, say hello to Emma, David.
Hello, Emma.
Hello, David. I love seeing that photo of you mid speak, I guess.
I should just say nobody else can see the photo.
Oh,
so that's
nobody
just
else can see that? That's a real shame.
Can see the photo.
We should try and put that photo up.
David, gorgeous.
I have to say, when I can't see you, you sound very healthy.
Thank you. You couldn't tell that I'm hooked up to dialysis.
No,
nothing's wrong with me. I just like to get my kidneys cleared out once a week because I have a Cadillac healthcare plan and I'm using it.
A lot of people have made
I've seen that on Real Housewives. They do that for beauty treatments. Just
They do?
No.
Oh.
You know what I do with Huma Abedin is I fillet a baby's face. And I don't want to, I shouldn't, I'm speaking to it. All I can say is the adrenaline that the baby emits when he or she, preferably he, sees me wearing his, preferably his face. If you can isolate that adrenaline, you're good in the sack for like, anyway, I don't want to get into it, but
I feel like you have.
It's just great for you.
I feel like you it's already good. Have gotten into it. Probably a little right. more than you probably.
That's yeah, I shouldn't. I spoke too much.
So the next recreational drug is baby adrenaline.
Post-grilling. You're putting words in my mouth.
No, I
hate the implication. Quite frankly,
I'm saying that I have experienced this before, and that's the next frontier for recreational drug use.
You know, I shared with you, Emma, that Huma Abedin and I like to fillet a baby's face and wear it, and to get a kind of adrenaline from the baby. And your tone of voice, you're implying that something's sick about that. You're being judgmental. And I didn't come on the show to be judged.
Now, David, as you know, you're a satirist and a comedian. But also the host of a podcast show called The David Feldman Show. I'm not sure if you're aware of that.
No, I'm not.
My understanding is that is on radio. Is that correct?
KPFK in Los Angeles. But more importantly, I'm a lefty. And you know that.
I do know that. Yeah.
Way back. Before Emma was even born, Emma, I was a lefty. You don't remember the Iranian hostage crisis, do you?
I was born in 94.
Okay. See, I am a lefty from what I said, keep them. That's how left I am.
He was very pro. Really, you were just really, really upset that that it kept ABC from rolling out its late night competition show.
Yeah.
To the Tonight Show.
Yeah.
That's a joke. That's a joke for like what? Like four people, would you say?
I don't know, but you and I, you remember Miracle on Ice, 1980 Winter Olympics?
Of Lake course. Placid. Eruzione.
I've seen
course.
The movie about it.
Yeah. Well, when they snatched victory from the jaws of defeat, I couldn't get out of bed for 3 weeks. That's how exciting. Much of a lefty I am. I was rooting for the Soviets.
You were so upset. There's no doubt in my mind. In fact, I seem to remember stories of how you protested that win, actually, when people were going out and celebrating. But David, let me ask you this, because you are a lefty from way back.
Way back.
Well, I think this is the first time that we've spoken since Joe Biden has become president, that Donald Trump is no longer president. I'm curious, how has it impacted your mood, your sense of your worldview?
Not a fan of Joe Biden at all. I'm a Bernie bro.
You're a Bernie bro. That's correct. Okay.
Back in 2016. I'm what?
You're toxic, obviously. So.
Well, I'm a diehard Bernie bro, and I won't compromise. In 2016, before Emma was born, when they were reversing the juice on Bernie and everyone was reducing the line movement on Hillary, I increased my exposure. And instead of going into the Pennsylvania primary with a backdoor cover, which would have lowered the puck line had John Edwards pulled an upset, guess what? I put it all on Bernie. All of it. I lost $200. But you know what? I would have made that wager again.
Hold the line.
Okay, well, that's great. I mean, you bet money on Bernie in 2016, but okay. So I still
would have, knowing what I know now, knowing that Bernie was going to lose Pennsylvania in 2016, knowing that Hillary was going to axe the spread, I still would have put a dime on Bernie to win.
A dime.
I would have taken the over under. That's a no-brainer, knowing what I know now, but there's no such thing as a time machine.
How do you calculate an over-under for a presidential primary?
Very complicated.
Okay.
You went down the wrong path with your demo on that one, my friend.
The point is, Emma, I always went with Bernie, and I've paid a price for that.
You've certainly paid a price, without a doubt. I mean, literally.
I no longer live in my mom's basement. She threw me out. I can't pay the rent, but I still believe in Bernie.
Yeah, you're a misogynist, obviously.
Why am I a misogynist?
Because you're a Bernie bro. That's the only thing that, you know, they're one and the same.
No, I am a misogynist. I asked you why, and you got it wrong.
Okay.
But you still haven't figured out why I'm a misogynist. Guess again.
Yeah, well,
David's,
you know,
a misogynist from way back.
Yeah, you asking me to figure that out for you, that's male privilege.
Exactly. She's not going to do your work for her.
Oh, okay.
But David, with all that said,
yes,
I am still curious as to
hate Joe Biden.
No.
That's an answer to your question. I hate the man.
But that is not an answer to my question, because I was not asking you whether you hated or liked Joe Biden. What I'm asking you,
I'm rooting against him. I want the economy to fail. I want the COVID. Go ahead.
Well, are you suggesting you want COVID to increase?
Well, I'm an accelerationist. I'm an accelerationist. I think things have to get so bad that finally America will come to its senses and say we were wrong about Bernie. So I'm betting against. I'm shorting America.
But wait a second. Now, you need to explain this to me. If COVID gets really bad, if Joe Biden's response to COVID is bad enough, what do you think happens at that point? Like, how does that
work? I get $200 because I have 6,000 deaths per day. I have placed an option on 6,000 dead a day by March 15th.
So,
are you doing anything toward this? Are you like going out?
I'm not manipulating the market. No, not at all. I'm just saying that if things, this is for the good of our country, things have to get so bad that people will finally say, you know what, we made a mistake with Biden. Let's put Bernie in there.
But do you think that? Oh,
but wait a second. I'm curious.
We learned that. Hang on. Didn't we learn that in the late 20s, early 30s in Germany, that things have to get so bad?
I've just got to say that the only casino that's probably, you know, placing over under bets or have them on non-COVID deaths is Trump's casinos, would you think? And maybe that's what this whole thing was about. He was the one manipulating the market.
Well, I believe in Bernie.
Okay. Well, wait a second. Now, wait a second. I want to go back to a comment you just made before that I think is a little bit. So your argument is that the only way for
I'm not arguing with you.
No. Okay. Your position is the only way that things can get better is if they get worse. And you cited as an example,
6,000 people dying by March 15th.
No, but you cited as an example, I'm sure, the Nazi regime in Germany. Now, just to be clear,
I got a couple hundred bucks running on
pretty bad
6,000 dead people by March 15th. Why you bring
in? Let me just, you cited this. I did not. You had tens of millions of people die. I mean,
yeah,
both at the hands of the Germans, obviously, 12 million, but also tens of millions died in the war, and much of Germany was, or big parts of it were flattened. And then I guess theoretically the point is that then it built back up,
mm-hmm,
and is now the Germany we know today. And you're suggesting,
yes,
that we need to go through something like that as a way of getting Bernie in?
I think you nailed it.
Just from a timeline perspective, do you see the problem there? I mean, because you just like recounted.
Well, you're like a Wall Street. You know what? I came on this show. You know, I didn't think this would be an ambush. You're like a day trader, Sam. No long-term horizon. You want immediate results. That's your generation. Yeah, I'm looking at the larger sweep of history. Look at Germany now.
Okay. Yes.
And by the way,
good and bad.
Who are you talking about? Say his name.
Who am I talking about?
Yeah, who specifically? The person, the evil person.
What evil person?
Joe Biden?
No, someone almost as bad. Hitler. You brought up Hitler, so you lost an argument that I didn't even know we were having. The minute you bring up Hitler, you've lost the argument.
Okay.
You look distant.
Okay. Okay. All right. So, yes. All right. Fine. So what? Where does this lead? Tell me what the strategy is.
The strategy is I believe in Bernie, and I'm putting everything I have left, the 96 Datsun, half a tank of gas with the Wendy's wrappers piling up in the back seat. I'm putting it all on the stimulus package coming in at 1.8 trill. And I need you to front me some money because I feel you owe it to me.
This is a
sure thing. And Dianne Feinstein's husband is putting it all on 1.8 trill. You know, Senator Richard Burr, North Carolina, he's betting it all on 1.8 trill. And you know more than anybody else, these guys have the inside dope. So
you're shadowing some of the big whales, if you will.
Yeah.
And they're on their bets. I have to say.
So if you could front me some money,
I'll think about it. I need to hear a little bit more of your reasoning, I think, as to why these are going to come in. But forgive me for saying, David, maybe I'm picking up on something, but I feel like your perspective towards politics has become much more oriented towards gambling.
Look at you. You look at you pretend. Okay. This is
kink shaming, right?
Unbelievable. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, what?
Who was the one to tell you told me to put a nickel down on Bernie being labor secretary? You called me. You said you were over at Fox News. You heard that Bernie was going to be labor secretary. And I trusted you and I lost it all. You said, don't hedge. Go into it. You'll cover the spread. I trusted you.
Again, what is a spread like in this scenario?
I lost a nickel.
Right.
What is a spread? Big deal. You guys having fun in the High Sierra drinking your, what are they, champagne cocktails on your show?
Wait,
you know,
a
nickel is a lot to me. And you go, hey, you know, it's a sure thing. Labor Secretary Bernie. And, you know.
First off, I got to tell you, I've not been at Fox News.
Yeah.
In.
Sure.
Maybe ever. Mm-hmm. Certainly not a decade.
I can't believe SAG-AFTRA threw you out of the union. You were an amazing actor.
Gambling.
You're an amazing actor.
I never called you with a gambling tip.
Yeah. Yeah. That's all you do is call me. You know what? Yeah. You know what? I'm not coming to your Super Bowl party.
I was going to come.
I'm not going. I don't think it's safe.
Now, David.
50 guys crammed into an extended stay out by LaGuardia. Every year, Sam has this Super Bowl party. And it's tempting. I like his friends.
But well, now it's awkward because I did not invite Emma or Matt or Brent.
It was 50 guys with all comorbidities. We're going to share our comorbidity. You said it's a bring your own comorbidity to the Super Bowl party.
But why would
masks
you go
optional?
That? Why wouldn't you encourage something like that when your agenda seems to be to accelerate and heighten the distinctions and the contradictions with the Biden administration and events like this Super Bowl party would increase the COVID infection rate.
I needed to get up to 6,000 by March 15th. That's why I was tempted to go. I got money riding on this.
Would you be willing to risk infecting yourself if you knew that you were able to infect, I don't know, 4 or 5 other people?
By March 15th?
Yeah.
I didn't want to say this, Sam. Your sister?
Excuse me?
Your sister.
The
one who lives in Borough Park. I love her. You know that. We all love her, and we were glad to see her finally. What are you laughing at? You're unbelievable. You're unbelievable. Emma, the guy.
Where are you going with his sister?
Okay. When she married Rabbi Teitelbaum's son in November, there were 5,000 Orthodox Jews crammed into that tiny shul.
Correct.
And maybe I should be saying this when we're not on the show, but
probably.
But you're not giving me the money on.
I didn't say that. I mean,
I know you love your. I don't want to say this. You know, at the wedding, at the time, there were like, what, 5,000 Orthodox Jews crammed into that shul. And it was supposed to be a joyous occasion. And because it was love in the time of a pandemic. And I get that. I didn't want to ruin it for you because, you know, it was nice. It was November. And, you know, seeing them in love, Rabbi Teitelbaum's son, it was great. It put a spring in our steps. But the band was too loud.
Of course.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of us were, you know, quarantining and we hadn't seen our relatives for months and you know, we wanted to talk. And I kept saying, can you ask the band to turn it down? I couldn't hear what anyone was saying.
Right.
Thank God nobody was wearing masks and I can read lips.
But very easy for you, yes.
I just doubt Rabbi Teitelbaum's wisdom. You would have known to tell the band to turn it down.
Right, right. Yeah. No, there was a lot of irresponsibility there when it came to the sound.
The sound.
The band was making. Yeah.
5,000 people crammed into that tiny shul.
Mm-hmm.
And I know the chicken was rubbery.
Chicken was rubbery, but at least everybody got a chance to take a bite out of that one piece of cake.
When we passed it around. That was nice.
Yes, that was.
That was
very special. Yes.
And, you know, the chicken and the cake, by the way, it was non-dairy creamer used in the icing. And I didn't want to send it back because, you know, they're the wait staff there and they're working. And you got 5,000 hungry Jews.
Of course.
And, you know, I don't want to, can I send this back? I didn't want to do it. But sometimes we have to do the things we're uncomfortable doing. So I sent it back.
So, David, let me ask you this.
Sometimes you have to stand athwart the mob and say this chicken is rubbery. Sometimes you have to do that. Something your generation doesn't understand.
David, can I ask you this? Are you on any type of medication at the moment?
Perhaps. Only because I have a Cadillac healthcare plan and I want to see what this baby can do.
I mean, you're on dialysis right now, right?
I'm on dialysis and
you're just trying out various medications. I presume none of these are prescription. Like, I mean, technically prescription.
No, I have a concierge service. I got the new 2022 livers. I got a liver transplant. Got the new 2022s.
I'm curious if we could just pivot for a moment to policy and some of the things that are being debated right now. What is your sense? We know this morning at 5:30 a.m. The process essentially to move
Wonderama.
The amendment-a-rama happened and the process to move forward on reconciliation is move forward. What is your stance on the whole $1,400 check question?
Well, first he said 2,000. And I think we should go back to 2,000, but do what he's doing with the 1,400, which is you give out the 2,000, but fewer people get it. That's the trick.
I see. Okay.
But he still keeps his promise that it's 2,000.
All right. Fair enough. Well, that was a very lucid response.
Thank you. Thank you.
What is your sense about whether the Democrats are going to do a $15 minimum wage?
I don't think. How do we get there? That's the problem. I'm for it. But how do we get there?
Well, Democrats may have to pass it on their own without any Republicans' help.
But don't you want bipartisanship? I mean, if you do it by yourself.
Right, yeah, that's a good point.
I would like people to be getting $15 an hour, but I think they would feel guilty taking that money if it wasn't bipartisan.
Right, of course.
I mean, it's you know, then it's dirty money. Do you want blood money? You're hurting. You're hurting McConnell's feelings. Do you want that? I wouldn't want that.
No,
but I'm holier than thou.
Right. I mean, you want to be able to feel good about that $15. But in fact, if it's bipartisan, if it's not bipartisan, you'll be able to only feel good about $7.50. And that's barely it's a 25 cent.
I mean, is money red or blue? No, it's green.
It's green. It is green. But I got to tell you something, Emma.
Yeah.
If let's say I made a fortune shorting, you know, GameStop, right? And suddenly there's $1 million in my bank account.
Mm-hmm.
But then somebody said to me, you know what? You didn't make this money from GameStop. You made it through reconciliation. I would, you know, I'd return the money. I'd say this doesn't feel, this is blood money. This is dirty money. This is like Nazi looted art that I'm keeping in my home.
Right. That classic ethical quandary.
There's a system, and I don't want my money through reconciliation. So if we can't, yes, in theory, I want $15 an hour, but only if it's bipartisan, only if everybody wants it.
I mean, these are, I think, important watchwords. I would imagine that goes for the $2,000 checks or the $1,400 checks that you're talking about too, right?
I want everybody to be healthy and wealthy, but I, you know, that also includes the Republican Party. Biden said he was going to unify us. So if he's going to do an end run around Mitch McConnell, I don't think he's an honest interlocutor, Joe Biden.
Interesting. There's not a lot of room for Joe Biden to succeed in your mind, is there? I mean, on one hand, you don't want him to go forward and do anything without the Republicans. On the other hand, you hate Joe Biden in and of himself. I mean, is there any way that you would ever find Joe Biden to be sufficient? What could he do?
Just have he could step here. Down and he could give the presidency back to Donald Trump as a good faith gesture.
So you're actually calling for Joe Biden to step down. That's the only way. And you're doing this from a left perspective. Is that
from
right?
The left? Yes.
Well, that's because you're an accelerationist, right? We're bringing this full circle.
I think we have to take our feet off the brakes, pedal to the metal, and let's go for it. And you know, forget the impeachment and those crazy kids who stormed the Capitol. Let's just move. Let's get past that. That's in the past. But when was that?
That was actually that was almost a month ago now.
Ancient history. Move on.
We even talked about that. We'd forgotten about it. You and I have never addressed that whatsoever. That's it.
I was against it.
You were against it. All right.
Yes, but move on.
And let me just ask this. I need to. Do you acknowledge that 9/11 happened?
Yeah, it was a couple of months ago. And I think we have another one coming up in a few months. I'm not good with math.
Do you acknowledge that this country was attacked on September 11th, 2001?
Yes, I absolutely do.
All right.
Well, how about the plane going into the Pentagon, though? David?
The plane that went into in public? Yes, I will acknowledge in public. I will say that I believe a plane and not a missile went into the Pentagon on 9/11 in public.
Right. In public. Well, there you go.
And
well,
I will
have
say
to have a public and private position.
Yeah. And yeah. So, yes, I do believe that.
Well, David, this has been fascinating. It's been fascinating to see the evolution of your politics with Donald Trump leaving office and Joe Biden coming in. All I can tell you is that on one hand,
do you think it's polite to throw him out of office? He just got there. I mean,
Donald Trump?
No. Don't poke the bear.
You're saying it's impolite to throw Trump out of office.
Yeah, don't poke the bear.
Don't poke the bear.
Yeah.
Right?
I don't like him. But no. Don't upset these people.
Well, David,
if you make nice with people like Lewandowski and Steve Bannon and Donald Trump and those crazy kids who stormed the Capitol, if you make nice with them, they go away.
You make nice with them, they go away.
Yeah, you're always looking for an argument. You're oppositional. That just breeds more hate.
Well, I'm sorry. I will contemplate the idea of reaching out to these people.
Did you ever think that maybe what those people who stormed the Capitol need is just a hug?
I mean, no. It didn't occur to me that would be all that they needed. It really felt like they needed something more.
Violence begets violence, Sam.
I'm not committing violence, David.
Really? Evicting a barren Trump and Donald Trump from their home of 4 years in this economic climate, in the middle of winter, evicting a family?
They're down in Florida now, so the winter thing is sort of less relevant, and they're in a golf resort. So
you have a pretty smug look on your face. You have a self-satisfied look, like you're glad to see Donald Trump without a
typical
place to live.
Typical liberal smugness.
I mean, I am. Yeah. I know. My being excited at Donald Trump losing the election is why Donald Trump won the election the first time.
And the second time.
David Feldman of the David Feldman Show. It is always a treat.
You don't think he won the second time?
I'm quite sure he did not. No. Yeah.
Hmm.
And you are convinced that he won. Why?
If you're counting the votes in base five, he won.
In what?
In base five. It's a mathematical reference that it's all
in
relative.
Base five.
Yeah. You need to study trigonometry. And this is way beyond your pay grade. But it all depends on which numeric system and where you move the decimal points. But go ahead.
And I guess it's my...
Matt is breaking up a little bit.
Yeah, can't hear you.
All right, so just lastly, did you see the Mike Lindell documentary this morning?
Me?
Yeah.
The MyPillow guy?
Yeah.
I don't know. I slept through it because I was using MyPillow, and it's the deepest, longest sleep I've ever gotten in my life. I wanted to watch it.
You want to give a coupon code for that?
I'm just saying, I may not agree with his politics.
We have a clip of the Mike Lindell documentary. Let's play it for you so that you can at least hear it. You're on the phone. We'll play that clip for you. This is from the Mike Lindell MyPillow documentary. Ooh, well, I don't know if I would call this a documentary as much as we'll see.
His hands.
The biggest thing against humanity in our country is this attack through these machines. They got this opened up, this revealed the machines to where we're at right now. So what you're going to watch during this show is 100% proof that the big thing was the theft by these other countries that came in to attack our country through these machines that are made to steal elections. Every election going forward in history, if these things would have happened, these two, and we would have never known, every single vote you would have ever made wouldn't have mattered. Somebody else would have made that vote. And we've all seen in this past month, you think it was a communist coming in and taking this over with people here. This is an attack not only on those other countries with communism, but they had domestic traitors right here in our country. Whatever's going on right now, we're seeing it. They're suppressing cancel culture. They're trying to cancel us all out. I just see churches. The Christian church, they're being attacked right now. People on social media, anyone that speaks up, they're going, you can't say that. You're gone. It's like they're doing whack-a-mole because they knew they were so close that we would never know in history what happened. But guess what? Now we do know.
Okay, so those stock images, were those added by Mike Lindell's team?
I would imagine,
Oh, the lifting of the hammer and the sickle was
David, your thoughts, the canceling culture, the suppression of canceling culture.
The suppression of canceling. I think he's, I know what's in his heart. He's not, you know, the most articulate, but I think in his heart, he loves this country.
Well, I mean, I think that's probably.
Have you tried David Hogg's pillow?
I have not. No.
Okay. Not even close.
My pillow's better.
Much better.
Yeah.
And granted, I would like to support David Hogg and go with his pillow.
But Mike Lindell's pillow is better in your mind.
And therefore, I'm against the assault weapons ban. Because Mike Lindell makes a better pillow than David Hogg. And I can no longer trust David Hogg and the anti-gun movement.
Well,
I did not get a good night's sleep using David Hogg's pillow.
David Feldman, on that note, I think we will say goodbye. This has been a really...
Can I plug something?
Sure.
We're doing a benefit for diet. Thank you, Emma. It was nice talking to you. We're doing a benefit. I'm being serious now. We're doing a benefit for Diabetic Fury. And this is serious, for diabetes awareness on February 13th. Robert Smigel will be there and Rick Overton. And if you go to my website and hit the pay-per-view button, you can buy tickets for all proceeds.
Is that right?
Go towards
Overton and Smigel?
Robert Smigel. Yeah, and it's pay what you want.
Oh, that's very nice. All right. Well, we'll put a link to that on our
Please.
Website. And of course, we will check it out to make sure that it's real.
I'm doing everything I can to fight turning this into a bit. But it's real. I promise you.
Real.
It's real. I swear to you.
Smigel and Rick Overton, very funny people. People will enjoy that if it is real.
And it is. I swear to God. It's. I swear to your God.
And this is what? This is next Thursday night?
No. February 13th. It's on a Saturday.
Oh, Saturday night. All right. Great.
And it's for diabetes awareness. So
fair enough. All right. Okay. Well, David Feldman, really.
Thank you. It was a lot of fun.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you, David.
The show, and honestly, your show is great. It really is. It's the best. It really is.
I don't know if I believe anything you say.
Okay.
David Feldman.
Thank you, Joe Rogan.
Thank you for joining. You're welcome. I'm not Joe Rogan. Sometimes you get David and you just don't know if he really knows where he's at, where he is in the moment. Like, you don't know. Like, you know, it's not inconceivable to me that David called into the show and thought that we were actually in his apartment.
Yeah. You know, I mean, the people's politics are complicated, Sam. It's not a linear.
His politics are complicated. His sense of geography, his sense of time, and awareness of other people around him. David sometimes gets very, very confused. I often worry about David Feldman. With that said, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to head into the fun half of the program. Just a reminder, it is your support that makes this show possible. We cannot do it without our members at all. You can become one of those at jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, you get the free show, you support the free show, and you get a free of commercials. And then you also get the member show, fun half of the program. So check that out, jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, don't forget, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. You get 10% off. You'll love their coffee. Check out sunsetlakecbd.com. Use that coupon code LEFTISBEST. You get 20% off. Try the fudge. Just if you have a problem with sweets like I do, just be careful. It is very, very delicious. Also, don't forget AmQuickie, amquickie.com. On Nomi's show today, and I feel like I've totally lost her ability to pronounce her name now because everybody's confused.
Well, I messed up. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you totally.
I fudged up, you know, because of the fudge.
It is. It's Femme Friday on Nomiki's show. You can find it at youtube.com/thenomikishow or twitch.tv/the_Nomiki_show. Francesca Fiorentini is going to be on, and Anna Kasparian. It's quite a lineup. Check it out, folks. Also, don't forget, Antifada, twitch.tv/TheAntifada. And Matt, what's happening in the Matt Lekian audio and visual universe?
We had a great left reckoning last night with Edward Angueso Jr. We talked about Section 230, and he gave his opinion on that. And also Kenzo Shibata, we talked about the teacher strikes. And then a little bit of a comparative politics between Mas in Bolivia and Syriza in Greece. And an upscale luxury post game where I talk about Lauren Boebert caused a mass diarrhea outbreak. Patreon.com/LeftReckoning. You haven't heard this story, Sam?
What?
No.
We'll have to cover this on Majority Report next week, maybe.
Oh
yeah. Up to 80 people with reports of bloody stool. From 100% of the people with reports of diarrhea had pork sliders. So
at the rodeo.
At the rifle rodeo, which was done
Well, let's save this. We got to do a whole package. We should do this. Should be our. We should produce this piece.
Patreon.com/LeftReckoning.
I'm curious as to Oswego's notion of 230.
Yeah, we had a good discussion.
All right, folks. We will see you in the fun half. 646-257-3920. Maybe we'll take a call or two. I'm not sure. But we will take your IMs. You can IM us through the app at majorityapp.com. Go.
RM for it.
All right, folks. 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half. Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back. Back, 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 back. Boy, back. And the alpha males are back. Back.
Just as delicious as you can imagine.
The alpha males are back. Back, 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 back. Boy, back. And the alpha males are back. Back, back, back.
Just want to degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back. Back.
I take all of it in my throat.
Alpha males are back.
Almost says what?
The alpha males are back, 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 back.
You are a madman!
And the alpha males are back, back, back.
I am a total cunt.
Can we bring back DJ the Anarchy song, please?
Yeah, or a couple of them. Just put them in rotation.
DJ Danner.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough of a break.
That's fucking nonsense.
Hey, fuck! Reminder!
I do not have Parkinson's.
And the alpha males are
psych. Fuck them. Fuck them.
Almost says what?
What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What?
What? Almost says what?
Hell out of bank. Hell out of bank. Hell out of bank. Hell out of bank.
All lives matter. Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black African. And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black.
You see Donald Trump out there, doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keep it at 100.
Can't knock the hustle.
Come on!
Fuck them. Fuck them. Fuck them. Things I do for the bigger game plan.
By the way, it's my birthday!
My birthday!
Happy birthday to me, Jew boy!
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black. Alpha males are back. Black, black.
Come on.
What?
Come on.
What?
Come on.
Someone needs to pay the price for blasphemy around here.
I am a total
pussy. Pussy.